Please be seated.
The court is ready to hear argument from petitioner in San Antonio v. Burton.
May it please the court.
Harvey Hardy will present argument for the petitioner. The petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
The state constitution and decisions of this court interpreting it are dispositive of this case. It's just that simple. Now, having challenged myself with that statement, I'll undertake to make good on it. The Court of Appeals ignored the Constitution and case law of this court. I have gone through their opinion at least a half a dozen times, and I stake my credibility on that statement. The state constitution, Article 5, Section 18B, second sentence, reads in most part as follows. The county commissioners shall exercise such powers and jurisdiction over all county business as is conferred by this Constitution and the laws of the state. Now, it boggles the mind, in my opinion, to consider the commissioners helping a city add to its city ETJ county business. It did not relieve the county of any burden with respect to those roads at the interstices between the abutters who did petition and those who did not. It did not relieve the county of any burden, and it created narrow strips, probably less than 100 feet wide, and the state legislature by law has decreed that no annexations shall be less than 1,000 feet wide. But we do not rely chiefly on that point, although it's a good one. The first case, the leading case by this court, is Mills County versus Lampasas County, 40 Southwest 403, by Chief Justice Gaines in 1897. And he's speaking on page 404 on the second column. He said, in most part, it is not true that the Constitution confers upon the Commissioner's Court any general authority over county business, but merely gives them such special powers as is conferred by the Constitution itself and the laws of the state. Well, we're not talking in this case about constitutional powers, and it's a given that there is not a law of the state specially committing to the commissioner's court the power that they undertook to exercise in this case. No general authority. That's the fulcrum of our argument. And the bottom line is that there is no specific statute or express statute conferring anything like this power over them. I shepherdized Mills County and found 57 entries. There were a number of duplications of Texas reports, citations to the cases by this court, others, but there are some 30 or more cases citing and quoting favorably Mills County. The last one, I will only mention two of these at this time. The last one was a 1989 case, which I cite because of its modernity. you'll see that over a period of almost 100 years, this court has been resolute and single-minded about the law on this subject. But the most powerful case for us, because the facts more clearly resemble the facts here, although not the same, is the case of Canales versus Laughlin, 214 Second 451, a 1948 case. It cites Mills County, and it is most in point because there the commissioners were exercising county business and road business and general authority over road business. They created the position of a countywide road administrator. And this court, quoting Chief Justice Gaines, struck that down, emphasizing that they had no general authority to do this. Also pointing out there was an express law on the books that counties could, with the vote of the people, adopt a countywide road engineer system. And incidentally, my county, Bexar County, has had a very good experience with a road engineer for many years. The in Vincent versus Burgess, 773 Southwest 2nd, 263, cites both Canales and Mills County with approval. There was a tax case, but it's the latest in a long list of cases by this court. There have been others probably by courts of appeal since then. I think the Chief Justice was a member of this court in 1989. I don't believe any of the rest of you were. Justice Spears wrote the decision in that case. And it followed the law of Mills County right down the line. Now, the Court of Appeals ignored the Constitution and all the case law. To maintain my credibility, I am going to qualify this in this way. Their opinion does mention the number of the constitutional provision, but it doesn't quote it. It doesn't discuss it. It doesn't attempt to apply it or distinguish it or interpret it. And it did cite, without quotation or discussion, one of the progeny of Mills, Anderson versus Wood, to a different issue. The issue to which they cited it was the one that where the commissioner's court has jurisdiction, they have broad powers to fulfill that objective. I think that the Court of Appeals showed an incredible neglect of the law of the state in this case. In fact, that murky opinion, the only clear thing about it to me was that it was result-driven and not precedent-driven. Now, Chief Justice Gaines in Mills also stated a familiar old rule that the cardinal rule of construction is the intent of the legislature. I think that kind of begs the question, a lot of questions, but that's the cardinal rule. The interesting thing here is that the original version of the statute involved here, which in its modern version is Local Government Code 81.28, was enacted by the 15th legislature in 1876. Bear in mind that our present Constitution was adopted effective as of 1876, post-Reconstruction. And the legislature had the onerous task of enacting legislation to provide for the system of government. And this original statute, which is Chapter Roman LV, was a laundry list of the powers and duties of the Commissioner's Court. And the significance of that is that it's been reenacted innumerable times, which you will find listed in the historical notes under Article 2351 or Local Government Code 81.28, innumerable times. And it has been maintained by the legislature in the exact wording of that original enactment. Now, to maintain credibility, I will point out a couple of, I think, immaterial differences. The original one in 1876 had the superfluous word superintend after general control. That was quickly dropped out, the surplusage. And these powers were under Section 4 and had five subsections. And they preface each subsection with the preposition to, T-O. Well, the stuffy grammarians of the 20th century dropped the preposition in front of those sentences. Actually, some of the most trenchant phraseology in the language begins with to. To forgive and to forget, to boldly go. Well, you get the idea. Anyway, these are the only changes, not only in wording, but in arrangement and sequence. Now, this court ruled in a case, and this one is not in my briefs, Stevens County versus Hefner, 16 Southwest 2nd 806, that where a law is reenacted and reenacted, it will retain its original construction. And when the 15th legislature passed this original and now unchanged laundry list of commissioners' duties, we know it did not have any intent to authorize them to petition for inclusion of land in of county roads in a city ETJ, because ETJs were not created till the passage of the Municipal Annexation Act in 1963, some 80-odd years after they enacted this original laundry list. So they had no idea that any such thing would ever happen. But that doesn't mean they weren't far-seeing. The county roads of 1876 were terrible dirt roads for the most part, and the transportation was by horse and mule and wagon and buggy. But they did know that in the future, they didn't know when or how or what, but they knew there would be great improvements in time in both the roads and in the means of transportation. And their enactment has been sufficiently flexible to take care of every innovation and improvement in that direction.
Any questions?
If
thank you, Council.
If your honors please, I'm out of time. Are there any questions? Thank you very much.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Randy Richards will present argument for the respondent.
May it please the court, good morning. My name is Randy Richards, and I represent the City of Burning. I want to give you four reasons why this court should affirm the judgments of the lower court in favor of Burning. First, these commissioners' courts had the express power of the owner of the roads in question to do what they did, and that is submit the request to have such roads included within the extraterritorial jurisdiction of the City of Burning.
And are you going to come back then and explain why the county's the owner?
Yes, I will, Your Honor. Secondly, they had reasonably implied power to accomplish the purposes intended by this express grant of authority given to them by the state legislature. Third, they had broad discretion to exercise these express and implied powers. And four, San Antonio has stipulated to all the facts necessary to support the judgments in favor of Burning. As to the first issue, they had the power of the owner. They had the power of the owner under Section 42.022 of the Local Government Code. There is this process for an owner of the area that is contiguous to the then existing extraterritorial jurisdiction of a city to request that his area be included within that ETJ.
And what does contiguous mean?
It's adjacent to.
I mean, touching at any point, or does it have to be a live touch?
Touching at any point. And it can be long, short, but touching and contiguous at any point.
Are the principal areas involved here that are not roadways, do any of them touch the ETJ of the City of Burney before all of this happened?
There's quite a large number, Your Honor, that did. The roads were put in to try to meet the wishes of the people who would have had a problem getting in quickly to the ETJ of the City of Burney because they weren't contiguous. And by allowing the roads to be put in all the way to the county line, this created a means for those people that were, say, on the other side of these roads to have a means to then be contiguous to the ETJ and petition to come in with
that,
their properties.
I want to ask, that leads to my question. It's not clear to me, because some of the roads were asked to be in and some were not, is it, when we're talking about contiguous, if I'm literally across the street from the ETJ, I'm not contiguous?
You're not if you're on the other side of the road, that's correct.
So I could be right at the city limits, I mean, right at the limit of ETJ, that there's a road that borders that.
Between you and the ETJ?
So, who then allows the road to be, arguably the ETJ could extend for miles beyond my property, going up on either side, but because this road's here, mine couldn't be.
That's
who,
correct.
Who authorizes the road to be contiguous?
The county commissioners in this case.
Is that, for all this stuff that's been happening, has it always been commissioners that do this, or has anybody thought about it until this case?
I know of no reported case, where this means of allowing properties to come into the ETJ of a city was used. I am aware of examples of matters that did not end up with a final judgment or where there was litigation that was not appealed where that happened, but not where there's a reported case discussing this.
Okay. And to make sure I understand, is there, did you find any case where someone was deprived of being in an ETJ because they lived across the street and the street had not been originally a part of the ETJ?
There are cases where people are not adjacent, and it was determined through the litigation that they were not adjacent, as the court has defined contiguous to be, and that's a question of law, whether it's adjacent or not, where they were not adjacent, and then that was held to be invalid, principally in an annexation context, where the city tried to unilaterally annex a piece of property. So in this case, with those roads being an area that was not within the ETJ of the city, the commissioner's courts, in attempting to help their citizens who wanted to be in the ETJ of the city of Bernie, put in those portions of the road. And there's an important point right there that I would make. And with all due respect to Mr. Hardy, he argues that somehow these roads have missing links in them and they were not all put in, that it's not continuous. That's not what happened in this case. In this case, the request submitted by the commissioner's court had attached to it a centerline description prepared by a surveyor from the point on the existing ETJ boundary of the city of Bernie, from that point all the way to the county line. So it is a continuous sequence for that road that was offered into the ETJ for Bernie.
Let me ask you a question. You say your first point was that the commissioner court had the express power of the owner of the road to do what it did. My question has to do with, so you're acting on behalf of the state. The first question is, did anyone request the views of the state of Texas on whether or not the road owner would make a request being the ETJ firm?
That's prior to my involvement, but to my knowledge, no.
Okay, my second question has to do with the statute. If you're acting on behalf of the state, the government code talks about, you know, the ownership, general control over the roads, highways, ferries, and bridges in their counties. Those are, you know, activities that the state would have an interest in the county as its agent performing. You want the roads maintained throughout the state. Does the state have an interest, a similar interest, in being an ETJ of one city versus another city? Is it a statewide interest that you're promoting here, or is it a provincial interest?
It's a local issue.
Okay,
and
it's
I think
a local
that the
interest.
Governing body of the county is better situated to address that local
then
issue.
Then how are the commissioner courts then furthering a state purpose?
They're furthering a state purpose because they have been delegated this power of general control over the roads. The statute 2351 set out specific duties over these roads. Basically, Your Honor, setting them up as far as being constructed, putting bridges on them, things such as installing traffic, regulations and
but
so
what
forth.
I'm saying is all of those are important to the state as a whole. Like the state needs the counties to exercise those functions so that you and I can drive through counties and not be worried about the maintenance of them. But you or I are not concerned about driving through a county, you know, far west of here, whether or not that road is within the ETJ of one city versus another. I'm just trying to find out where is the state interest in this that the county was promoting.
Well, the state interest would be in the counties which have long in Texas, in fact, I understand from the treatise by David Brooks, that the roads was one of the original four core functions of county government, which the state gave the county the responsibility for taking care of. And what I was getting to while I go talking about the specific duties, basically the state has said, here's how you set these roads up and what you do with them, and then someone has to control those roads after that has happened. And in my interpretation, I believe that the power of general control was given to counties to regulate and control what happened with those roads after they were established. Now, there is a state interest involved there because the state legislature would have an increased burden exponentially to come in and have to be responsible for local issues involving individual county roads in the state of Texas. Out of curiosity, one of the things I did is my office contacted TxDOT, and I understand there is in excess of 142,000 miles of centerline mileage for these roads. That's just if you took all the county roads and put them end to end. So you have a tremendous potentially amount of roads that could have all kinds of local issues associated with them, and it's in the state's interest to allow the governing body of the county to address those local issues and not have that become a burden of the state.
How does all of that tie into the statute relating to extraterritorial jurisdiction?
It ties in because any owner has a right to submit that area which it owns into the ETJ. In this case, the county did that on behalf of the state, and the county did it on behalf of the state because these residents in Kendall and Comal counties wanted to be have their future welfare, if you will, subject to regulation by the city of Burney rather than the city of San Antonio. So they were
If folks up in the panhandle wanted it and they could get the intervening counties to go along, they could do that too, I take it.
There's no limitation on that, but practicality, I would suggest. There's no reason to have something going way away from your county because the other people in other counties would not have an interest in it. So it comes to a logical conclusion at some point.
Well, this goes two counties away, right?
This goes to two counties, but the area, the residents, the people that are living there, they're all in close proximity when you look at the map. This is generally an area of residence, and it just happens to be that there's a county line. We do not go that far into Comal County, but there's a county line where these people predominantly live. And they wanted, this was all a voluntary choice on their part. This is not something like a unilateral annexation. This is something that they wanted to do, and the county simply assisted them in doing that.
Can this area be annexed?
Yes, sir.
By birth?
Yes, sir. Not all at one time. There's a limitation on how much you can annex in any one year. And there's been the argument made that because it's only 100 feet wide, maybe a road, that it can't ever be annexed. That forgets about when most annexations occur, you're taking in an area. You're taking in a number of properties in the roads, and that certainly can be more than 1,000 feet. Cities in Texas annex areas all the time that as a result of those annexations, county roads become within the city limits, or formerly county roads become in the city limits.
But if all the land around it is in San Antonio's ETJ, they can't annex.
We cannot annex inside their ETJ. What has happened now, there is a line where the two ETJs have abutted each other. Burney cannot, under the map that's attached to the final judgment in this case, annex within their ETJ. They cannot annex within our ETJ.
If we were to decide this case in favor of the city of San Antonio, what would be the effect on the extraterritorial jurisdiction statute and the legislature's intent behind enacting that statute around the state? What would be the practical effect?
The practical effect would be if the authority relied upon by Burney to do what happened here, by the Commissioner's Court to do what happened here. If that was not available, people under 42.00022 would still be able to submit applications or requests to be included, but you would not have perhaps this means to move as quickly as happened in this case, and that's by putting in county roads. What you've done is you've extended areas that allowed more properties to be contiguous at an earlier point in time than otherwise might have happened.
So the legislature's intent behind the ETJ statute could still be fulfilled even under the city of San Antonio's interpretation of the power that goes to the county, limiting the power of the county commissioners?
As far as the submission of requests to include properties, yes, ma'am.
Well,
they wouldn't be able to get in under the wire like they did here.
Here, as you read the briefs, you see that basically, and very candidly, a race happened.
Right.
And
Burney would have lost the race under the other.
We would have lost, and it's important to understand, we would not have lost because all of the properties are not dependent upon the county roads. Only in a certain area in this ETJ, in the map attached to the final judgment, is dependent on the county roads. There is an exhibit, PX5, that has a black line on it, which is the area that is not dependent on the county roads.
Let me make sure I understand this. Let's assume I own 1,000 feet of frontage on a county road, and just across the other side of the county road is the city's ETJ, and I'm not contiguous because of the intervening county road.
It was our interpretation subsequently that you're not contiguous because the properties do have to touch, and there is this space that belongs to someone else, the owner being the state in this instance. And so the people who are across the road don't touch the people on the other side of the road. You can go down the roads as long as each one comes in contiguously, but you can't go across the road. It becomes a barrier. And so that was one of the things that the commissioner courts considered in trying to fulfill the wishes of these people who wanted to be in Bernie's ETJ, that this was a means to let them come
now,
in.
Now, on this process, you say it just takes longer, but in this process, you had several property owners who didn't petition to have their property in the ETJ.
That's correct, because it's all voluntary.
And so that left some property owners who wanted to be in the ETJ not abutting other property owners.
That's correct. And as long
so
as
it's entirely possible that under this pattern, until the ETJ abutted them, I mean, it's possible there'd be property owners in an island out there that could never be brought into the ETJ.
If you look
they
don't
at abut.
In the map attached to the petition response, the petition for review, we have a small-scale map of the big one that's in the record of the court, and you'll see some yellow areas. They were referred to as islands in the case. And those are areas where the people did not request to be included within the ETJ. But because of areas around them that were other properties that could become contiguous, they actually, as the process developed, were surrounded by these other properties that are within the ETJ. But because it's a voluntary procedure, since they did not ask to come in, then they are not in the ETJ.
Are they now part of San Antonio's ETJ?
These are yellow holes, islands, if you will. They're inside the kind of blue-green heavy line on the exhibit attached to the judgment that encircles these areas.
They're not in anybody's
ETJ. And they cannot become in San Antonio's ETJ, in my opinion, because of the principle that ETJs cannot overlap. So San Antonio cannot overlap and come inside of Bernie's ETJ to capture these people, if you will. They will basically be there to a point in time that either another owner of that property would voluntarily request to come in, or if they were annexed, because that's a possibility too.
You have to get closer to them as the years allow.
As the years allow. When this started, we had a half-mile ETJ. We were a general law city. We are now a home rule city. We have a mile ETJ. And so we're a rapidly growing area, too, and so these areas could become annexed at some time in the future.
At the time this happened, was the expansion of the San Antonio ETJ in this area by petition or by growth?
San Antonio, and this is how this whole dispute started, decided to annex a strip 1,000 foot wide that was located inside two federal military reservations along a county road, now a state highway. There would be no residents to serve. It extended like a long finger up from the last point of the city limits up into the far reaches of Bexar County and alongside the city of Fair Oaks Ranch, and came to the southwest corner of an intersection of two roads there, being 1,000 feet wide. No one can live there. There are no services to ever be provided. But what the effect of that annexation did, and because of their population, they have a 5-mile ETJ, and this would have created an arc from that point all the way across Bexar County, up into Kendall County, and up into Comal County. They would have captured an extremely large area. It's about 25,000 acres involved in this case, in which Bernie would have no right to regulate growth, subdivision, plat approvals, possibly utilities, things like that in this area. And this would be an area even over county lines into Comal and Kendall counties. But San Antonio, with officials sitting in San Antonio, who would not have to answer in an election to these folks in the other counties, would be making decisions regarding their properties in these counties. And I think that was one of the driving forces that the county commissioners felt were worthy to do what they did.
And that's why you think the commissioners in Kendall and Comal counties went along with the requests of some of their landowners, but also in cooperation with the city of Bernie, I guess.
Yes, because in Kendall County, for instance, has a long history of a working relationship with the city of Bernie. These roads that went into Bernie's ETJ, there's some merit in the fact that these roads later could become subject to maintenance by the city of Bernie. There'd be coordination between the remainder of the county road system and the city of Bernie with these roads. There were other things that could happen with these roads where the city of Bernie already had a pre-existing working relationship with the city of, I mean, the county with the city of Bernie, rather than, say, the city of San Antonio. It just made more sense for them to be in the ETJ of someone that they had such a relationship.
You know, the troublesome thing, just to put it bluntly, is when you look at the map, the ETJ of Bernie's going out for miles. I mean, you think, will it stop at Jefferson County? Or, I mean, it just keeps going.
Well, it seems
a little bizarre.
Well, it can only grow, Your Honor, because it's a voluntary request. This was not an annexation. This was not a unilateral annexation. These people wanted to be in Bernie's ETJ. The statute has no limitation on how far out these properties could go. To give you the contrary of that, if you look at the map of what San Antonio attempted to do as an exhibit to our response to the petition for review, what was intending to be accomplished there but to lock up a very large area of land that you could control and not have to do anything for the folks there? And so there is no limitation, apparently, in the statute of how far this could grow. As I said earlier, I think as a practical matter, there's a logical conclusion where it stops at some point.
Well, practical limitation is that the county line, you have to get another county set of county commissioners to make this report.
That's correct.
Would you briefly distinguish the Canales case?
Yes, sir, I would. The Canales case, and that's interesting, Mr. Hardy pointed that case out to in his remarks, and it speaks to Article 2351. But if you read that case carefully, with respect to that statute, and they were talking about creating a unit road system, which is not mentioned in 2351, that part of the decision by the Supreme Court was upheld on 2351. The part they reversed the case on was talking about employing these other persons to have overseeing responsibilities, that there were certain state statutes that the commissioners, in hiring them and setting kind of their terms of employment, didn't comply with. That's the reason the decision went against the county for that aspect of the case, not with respect to 2351. In fact, they actually, if you read it closely, in my reading, found an implied power that this county could have this unit road system that it wanted from the express powers given in 2351.
So you think that if you look at the Court of Appeal and Supreme Court case together, you're favored to do the commission?
I think when you look at the part about 2351, yes, sir.
The Court of Appeals was troubled by the argument that if the county commissioners can't do this, nobody's left but the legislature. And surely the legislature didn't mean for this to only happen when they were in session. But how often does it happen that county commissioners do petition cities for inclusion of roadways in the ETJ?
As I said, I found no reported cases where this means was used other than our case. I am aware, because of my research in the case, of other cities where this process was carried out, but it never reached the point where the litigation was appealed. There was an agreed judgment or other resolution of the litigation of the dispute.
Any other questions? Thank you.
May it please the Court, Mr. Donald Bain will present the rebuttal for the petitioner.
May it please the Court. Chief Justice Phillips, as a historical note, the Court may be interested to know that Mr. Hardy was San Antonio's first city attorney under our current charter, which was adopted in 1952, and first argued his first case before this Court in 1957. We're pleased and proud to have him represent us again. Back to the case. Your Honor, Justice Heck, you asked whether or not how common it was to have this happen. The answer is there's only been one at a time. That was this Bastrop versus the city of Austin. And that was apparently a tool that was devised, and small cities were using it, were trying to figure out ways to thwart annexation by larger cities. And so this is the first case in which this tool is being analyzed. That's one of the reasons why this case is so very important. If this case goes the way that we think it should be with the city of San Antonio, someone's bright idea about this wonderful tool will be shot, and that would be the end of it.
Well, let me ask you a question on that point, this reasonable and necessary management of roads. Suppose the county has a beautification policy that county roads will be lined with blue bonnets, or county roads will have trees, or will have bricks that demark the intersections. And San Antonio doesn't have that policy about roads. Couldn't the county literally sit there and say that we're in cooperation, a mutual enterprise with the city of Bernie on beautification of our roads, and we want our roads to all be in Bernie's ETJ to do that? Would that be reasonably necessary to management of the roads?
I don't think so, Your Honor. I think we're stretching pretty far when we get that far. But there wouldn't be any need for the counties to be involved with the city of Bernie at all if they wanted to have I think that the counties themselves have the authority to maintain the roads. They have the budget to maintain the roads. If they wanted to do beautification, I think they can do beautification. If they want to contract with the city of Bernie or with BFI or anybody else to come in and help with them, that's fine. They can do that. But they can't give away their ETJ. And they can't give away the roads as part of the ETJ. That they can't do.
Well, they haven't given away the roads. They've just allowed the roads to be in a city's ETJ.
Well, they haven't allowed the roads to be in. They did an affirmative act for a petition. They had to have authority to do that, which we maintain they did not have authority to do. And it isn't something that they just sat back and let happen. Instead, they actually had to go off with the petition.
Well, they had the authority to move a road into the ETJ if they wanted to.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't.
They had the authority to move a road into the ETJ if they chose to. They could close down one road and reroute it into the ETJ.
I'm a little hard of hearing, and I frankly couldn't hear you at all.
They could close a road and move it over into the ETJ if they so chose.
They could. They could do that. But that is part of the management of the roads as to whether or not they close roads. Now, when you're talking about closing roads, there are very distinct rules that have to do with how you close it. They can't just do it, we're going to go close these roads. They have a statutory procedure that you have to follow.
Did Kendall and Comal counties lose any control over the roadways when they became part of the ETJ of Bernie?
I don't think so, John. I think not. I think they maintained whatever control they had before. I think that, in fact, as far as the county is concerned, this had no effect on them, whatever.
So as far as giving up state interest, they didn't give up anything?
They didn't give up state interest, but they didn't operate with state interest. And that, I think, is the question that Justice Jefferson was asking about, is what is the state interest involved here? And our answer is, there isn't any. Is that simple?
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the second clause. We'll take another recess.
All rise.